All right. Welcome back to the new Earl Ingram Show, 540 AM WAUK and 101 FM, the show. You can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at the same number. Sandy Williams is in the studio. I'm glad he's here. And we are talking about, you know, just how serious an issue this is. I was asking Sandy during the break if the average American citizen even is clearly not in tune into what's happening right now. And it's, you know, we're living our lives and we're waiting for the warm weather. And, you know, there's going to be some complaints as the oil prices soar. And that's maybe when we'll finally start to thinking about this.
Well, yeah, I mean, apparently oil prices are soaring already. So
right.
It's like an immediate impact. America's used to observing European wars. That's what we did until World War II. We basically were observers with the protection of our two oceans, fortresses on each side, the moats that protect the United States from the rest of the world. We still have that. And, you know, I think that the average American citizen can look at this and immediately identify good guy and bad guy. The bad guy is the invader. The good guy is the poor invaded country. Some people will call it authoritarianism versus democracy. I've seen that discussion as well. That sort of ignores the reality that both Russia and the Ukraine have very much the same governments, one modeled after the other. They're both superficially democracies, and they're both actually oligarchies in terms of how they're run internally, and they're both corrupt countries. The situation here is far more complicated, and like I said, is the result, I think, of 30 years of unrealistic public policy on the part of the United States and Western Europe in terms of how they've handled Russia. And they've essentially, through that process, created Putin. There's a very interesting observer of Russia, first the Soviet Union, then Russia, named Vladimir Posner. And Vladimir used to be on a show here in the United States in the 90s. He was, before the USSR fell, rose all the way to the level, I think, of being essentially the propaganda minister of Russia without having that title. He was in charge of the voice of Russia, which is like the voice of America, and then he went on to other things. And he won Pulitzer Prizes when he was here working with Phil Donahue on TV in the United States, and then left the United States when Roger Ailes was censoring him, he said, and went back to Russia. During the 90s, when Russia was wide open, the government was weak, there was no censorship, and he found a role in Russia of being sort of the number one sort of truth speaker. Posner makes a very good case for the proposition that the United States policies essentially set the table for Putin's tough guy long-term authoritarian rule. And it was done because of the way we essentially ignored the realities of Russia and essentially belittled it and backed it into a corner and tinkered with the likes of Ukraine, which is a very central sort of part of what was viewed as the old Russian Empire. It's a little bit like, I suppose, China tinkering with Texas after the collapse of the United States, and it's split into a much smaller version of the United States and a bunch of freestanding states like Texas and California. How would we react to that? And I think, so we didn't handle it well all the way along, and we created a situation in which this has happened. And we created a situation in which this has happened, in which we are really unwilling to stop it from happening. So if you recognize in the beginning that that's the role you have, then you would do other things. You would use diplomacy instead of backing it into a corner, causing it to happen, and then watching it.
So, Sandy, does it matter that former President Donald Trump and you're reading some of the other things from the right who say this would have never happened if Donald Trump was the president of the United States, and Donald Trump talked about, you know, what a masterful move this was by Putin. But we're at a point, Sandy, where historically it's always been when these types of things happen, the United States speaks with one voice. Is there anything to be said about speaking with one voice, or we at a point now with this division that that doesn't matter anymore?
Well, speaking with one voice has carried over into defense spending. Is, you know, so defense spending became a political electric third rail like the subways have, and you, and politicians couldn't really touch it. They couldn't attack defense spending and say, look, if we weren't spending $750 billion on defense, we'd be able to have child daycare and all the rest of it. But that discussion almost never happens, and we don't do a triage on our defense expenditure because we speak with one voice on defense. And while I agree that it's important that we speak with one voice, particularly when our troops are in the theater of war, and if we're in the line of fire, if we're in the crosshairs of danger, yes, absolutely. This is not currently a circumstance where we are in the crosshairs of danger, and it might be important that at least we have dissident voices speaking about our foreign policy to see if we can't get it right-sized and correctly aimed. I think that the Trump enthrallment with Russia was much more of a personality cult, sort of a bromance that he had with Vladimir Putin, and not so much based on an understanding of the realities of Russia and the eastern part of Europe, which Russia occupies, and Eurasia, the whole continent of Eurasia. It's just that it's much more complicated, and I think it is important that we begin to realize that the positions we take in international affairs, particularly as it relates to the areas of the world where we are not experienced, like Eurasia, that we begin to do it on a much more reasoned basis than we have in the past, where we simply recognize good guys and bad guys, and there's no nuance to what we do. As soon as we recognize Russia as a bad guy in this circumstance, the nuance of our handling of it went out the window. And it's going out the window with China, too.
So in this good guy, bad guy scenario, that the United States, and certainly Russia, is looking at the United States as the bad guy. China is looking at the United States as the bad guy. I mean, you know, it depends on who's
well,
looking
it's in,
through
it's interesting.
What
when I was in Mexico talking to just common citizenry down there, they think America's the bad guy, too. I mean, I think we as Americans don't understand that our kind of swaggering conduct around the world, telling people what they need to do to fix themselves and clearly not doing much to fix ourselves, has earned a great deal of backlash around the world with respect to what they think of American government. I think they think American people are wonderful. I just don't think they think the American government is something they're very charmed by.
So what do you say then to people who say, well, if you say that, Earl, you say that, Sandy, but people are lined up all over the world trying to get into America.
Well, America obviously is a place of opportunity, and America is internally pretty much a place where the rule of law applies, unless maybe you're a black jogger in Florida.
Right.
But the rule of law does apply here. Merit seems to get people to the place where their merit deserves, unless maybe they're not exactly the right color. And we're working on that, so that's improving. So I think this is definitely a country with great opportunity. That doesn't mean our foreign policies are sound, and that doesn't mean that the places that these people are leaving from, they aren't leaving from because of the mayhem we've created. I mean, what happens every time we get into a war is that the refugees all come to the United States.
You know, you talked about the foreign policy, and I talked about that a little bit earlier. We as citizens, should we know about the foreign policy of our nation? Should we be entitled to know what is going on in our name all over this earth? Is that too much to ask, or is that something that should be taboo to the American people?
Well, it's definitely something we should know. It's something we should be educated in our schools enough so we're in a position to know. You know, the curriculum in our schools still doesn't teach kids about the Ottoman Empire. I just was talking to a grandson who's taking Western civilization, and it doesn't include anything about east of France, Germany, and the traditional Europe, you understand that Europe extends, and Eurasia is all one continent now, the way most people view it. And we aren't studying anything like Eurasia and all of the civilization associated with it. The Ottoman Empire is a mystery. Nobody seems to know about that. If we actually studied the world and tried to understand the world in our educational processes, we as a people might be in a far better position to play a role in molding foreign policies.
Well, and the rest of the world is studying more about us than yes. we are about them.
Oh, yeah.
We've got to go to a break. Phone lines are open as always, 844-967-2789. In the studio, Sandy Williams. What do you say? We'll be right back.
Until you use me up. It hurts sometimes. It's true, you really do abuse me.
Yeah. Has there been any word? You got many
You get me in a crowd of high-class people.